On Point is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. It's a hot new TV show about young Americans straining to launch their lives in an uncertain time. And it's not premiering on TV. The new show called Quarter Life will premiere this fall on the web, the internet. Not the big screen in the family room, but the little ones all over. TV and television-style content is pushing deeper onto the internet and computer screens. It's old style, like Lost and 24, but it's also new, like Prom Queen and Funny or Die. Don't know those yet? You may soon. Up next, On Point, TV goes to the web and change happens. Joining me today from Los Angeles is Joseph Min. He covers the media industry for the Los Angeles Times. He's author of All the Rave, The Rise and Fall of Sean Fanning's Napster. Joseph Min, thanks a lot for being with us.
Hi, Tom. Thanks a lot for having me.
And with us in the studio, James Quivy, Vice President and Principal Analyst at Forrester Research, where he tracks television and media technology. James McQuivy, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Joseph Min, introduce us to Quarter Life, if you would. Who is the gang putting this up, and what's the story? What's the show?
Well, it's a little bit like 30-something, only it's 20-somethings, and they're all trying to break into creative businesses, working as bartenders and things like that. But the people behind it are fairly impressive. Ed Zwick and Marshall Herskowitz, they've got I don't know how many Emmys, but they've got a lot of them. And this is really different. This is a long-running TV series style show with serious money behind it that's going to be only on the web.
Now, let's be real about it. They did take it first to network TV. It wasn't picked up. So this is their second choice, and yet it's turning a lot of people's heads. Why, Joseph?
Well, they did take it to ABC. ABC said no. Mr. Herskowitz said he would have gone to the internet sooner or later with some show, and this one seemed to fit. There's kind of an internet theme to it, and one of the major plot points is a video blog that tells a little too much about the circle of friends. But it's a big deal because it's coming rapidly after other sort of high production value shows for the web. Prom Queen, which is backed by Michael Eisner, the former CEO of Disney, got a lot of attention for having some serious money behind it. And then there was something else called Afterworld, which was only announced last month, and that's got 130 episodes, and the people behind that are pretty serious and say they're spending $3 million. And this is supposed to be even more costly than that.
So the money is getting big, and so are the shows online. Let's listen just a little bit from the trailer of Quarter Life. It comes up in November on MySpace.com. Features 6 20-somethings and a video blog.
Say something, 'cause all the words that you wrote. It's my curse that I can see what people are thinking, what they want to say and can't say, who they want to be with, and what good does that do me if nobody can see me?
James McQuivy, it sounds like TV to me, but it's online. What do you make of where entertainment online has been and where it's going right now?
Well, we're in an amazing period right now where television is going online from all directions, not just these people who couldn't get their show online, but also ABC.com, who's been putting its full episodes online for a year now.
And just for Housewives and Grey's Anatomy, Lost, and all,
exactly.
Ugly Betty, right on down.
And doing extremely well with all of them, so much so that NBC and CBS and Fox are all trying to play catch-up. So it's
you've
amazing.
So you've got Heroes and CSI and Big Brother and 24 and Prison. Everything seems to be headed there.
All of these shows. And they're there the day after they air in primetime. The networks have caught on to the internet. And so it's no surprise that anyone else who's hoping to make a television show is going to try to use the internet as well. Because guess what? The audience will do this. That's something that 2 years ago many people thought, you know, would people really watch a full-length show on their PC? And guess what? They do. We found that it works. And advertisers are desperate to pay for those people because they are the cream of the crop in the advertiser world. So no
that
surprise.
That is, they're young.
They're young. They have more money than everyone else. And it's the group that you're really interested in reaching in any market. And so with your consumer electronics, if you're selling, you know, a new DVD player, if you're selling a new TV set, all of these things, you want that audience. And that's what you're going to pay a premium for.
Joseph Min, so you've got full-length regulars, TV shows up there the day after. But what about these that are going straight to the web? In the case of Quarter Life, it's not full length. They're breaking each hour-long show up into bits, rolling it out in kind of a short format. Is that one thing that the web will mean? Are we going to see, the sort of format we thought of on TV as standard, chopped up into mini bites?
Well, what you're definitely going to see is a lot of experimenting. People are going to try a lot of things, and they're going to see what works. It is unusual that these are going to be 8 minutes long, which is really, really long in web terms. Sure, some people watch full episodes of something like Grey's Anatomy, but people it's a lot easier to get people to watch something short. Despite the attention of Prom Queen, that Michael Eisner back series, you have a lot more people watching. You know, a goalie gets hit with a soccer ball, which is only 5 seconds. So the shorter it is, the easier it is to get a viewer. The trick is for these people that have been trained in doing half an hour show or an hour-long show for a major network is to have a beginning, middle, and end to even something as short as 8 minutes or 3 minutes, which has been more standard. And we're going to see a lot of people trying different things. I don't know if you're going to be able to have an 8-minute segment that doesn't really have much of a cliffhanger and have people coming back. What you need for the advertisers is people that keep coming back episode after episode.
Let's get another feeling of what that may sound like. Here's a clip from Afterworld, created by Electric Farm Entertainment, a bunch of heavyweights there as well. It's an animated show running 130 episodes, made for the web. Each one lasts 2 to 3 minutes. The basic premise: Russell Shoemaker works as an advertising executive in Seattle. He flies to New York to land a big account. His first morning there, he wakes up to find that nearly everyone has disappeared.
I'll never forget walking out onto Fifth Avenue, middle of Manhattan, and all I could hear were birds.
Hello? Hello?
The whole world had shut down overnight, like someone had just flipped a switch somewhere. I wandered around looking for signs of human life, my brain desperately trying to process it all. Then it started to rain. I lived in Seattle. I was used to rain, but this was like nothing I'd ever seen before. This was unnatural. This was biblical. I thought I was the last man on earth.
Boom, there's Afterworld from Electric Farm Entertainment. Now that clip, James McCoovey, was 52 seconds. At 2 to 3 minutes, that's almost half the show. Where are we headed here?
Well, exactly as Joseph said, because we are developing the internet video habit in very short bites, whether it's a goalie getting hit by a soccer ball or a cat flying around on a ceiling fan. And so we're in many respects, we're nervous about, will they watch more than 3 minutes? So somebody's got to try this, and this is an experimentation. But frankly, we are very accustomed as a culture to stories that last longer. And in fact, if you look at the trend in movies, movies are actually getting longer as directors are being given permission to go to 2.5 to 3 hours in some cases. I think this dalliance or this experimentation on the internet with 2 to 3 minute formats will only work for very small groups of people who are interested in that topic more than anything else.
Let's go to a caller. Hindi's calling from Columbia, South Carolina. Hindi, you're on the air.
Hi, I just wanted to say we like the show so much, and this is a really great topic because all of the clients that I work with, I'm an independent producer in Columbia, South Carolina, and all of the clients that we work with now, we don't do anything that we don't do an online component as well, and so we're sort of in the trying to figure out what the format is.
Hindi, when you say clients, what do you mean?
We do a lot of educational production and sort of public outreach things. I work for a lot of state and federal government agencies through Columbia, and we produce sort of public outreach that gets our story out there.
And you're doing video for them, the kind of thing that once might have run in public service ads on television, and they
exactly
want web video too?
Exactly. That's exactly right. And we're finding that, you know, you don't pitch a project that you don't put this as a component.
And do you see this as the future or as just kind of a embroidery on the TV mainstream?
I absolutely see it as the future, and I think it's not going to get anything but a lot bigger.
Indy, keep it rolling there in Columbia, and thanks for your call. Joseph, men, how are the industry titans looking at this? Do they see this as a kind of a play thing? I mean, I know there's big money here as well, YouTube in there and Google with that and Rupert Murdoch in, but is this at the margins? Is this the big time of the future? Is it getting to be that yet?
It's not there yet, but everybody knows that it's coming, that this is going to be a very big deal. And they're trying to figure out how to stay in front of it and how to capitalize it, even at the risk of taking away some of their other viewers. I think one of the more interesting things is Disney CEO Bob Iger was one of the first to put full shows online. Disney owns ABC.
Right.
And one of the big concerns from investors and others was that there would be cannibalization, that people would not watch the network show because they could watch it online later.
Why tune into Lost when you can see it the next day online?
Right. And what he found is that it actually increased viewership. And that's because even the most dedicated follower of a given show is going to miss something, is going to miss some show. And a lot of these shows have become more intricate in terms of the plot lines, you know, Desperate Housewives or those. They've got plot lines that run over several episodes. And if you miss one, you've got less incentive to come back to it. This way you can catch up on what you missed online, and you're more likely to stick with it for the rest of the season.
Let's listen to just a little bit more of what's going on the web when it comes to TV-style production. Here's from Prom Queen. Prom Queen's a web teen soap opera backed by former Walt Disney CEO Michael Eisner. The show started last spring, right before prom season, continued through the summer. In this scene, the assistant to the headmaster at the school, Jill, organizer of the prom, and prom queen herself in 1988, has rigged the vote so her daughter could be crowned prom queen. When her misdeeds are realized, she takes a knife to the real prom queen's throat. On the stage with her is Ben, the prom king. He's been receiving mysterious text messages urging him to kill the prom queen. Right before the crowning, a fellow student handed him a gun. Here the drama plays out between Ben and Jill.
Prom Queen is sponsored by Hairspray, in theaters July 20th.
This girl is not the prom queen. I am the prom queen.
Get away. Back away!
Ben has a gun.
I have not worked my entire life, wasted my life to see this prom torn apart like this. I believe in everything.
Oh, geez. There's prom queen. And you get the feeling, oh, wow, James McQuivy. Okay, it's Michael Eisner. He was head of Disney. But that just sounds dorky, camp, amateur. Does that mean it's television?
That's exactly our fear, of course, is that in order to get any attention on the internet with millions of videos that you could be watching on YouTube, you've got to go right to the bottom of the cultural barrel and find something that's going to draw people in. You're going to see a lot of sex, a lot of drug humor. If you look around all of these shows, one common denominator they have is that they reach for the absolute lowest common denominator in order to try and get somebody to watch. And that is, you know, for culture critics, that's a big concern. But for advertisers, as you heard, the advertiser promo that was built
Hairspray.
Into that. Exactly. They don't care. They want to reach people. They want to reach these people. And that's possibly what the culture now has to adapt to.
Joseph Mann, Michael Eisner's a big name. What's L.A. taking from the prom queen experiment?
Well, there are a couple things here. One is that obviously the cost to produce these things is much less. So you don't need anywhere near, you know, the advertiser money that you would need for network TV, where it costs, you know, millions of dollars to produce, and you need that money to come in revenue. The other thing is, I wanted to follow up on something James said, which is that it's not just that it's the right demographic that the advertisers want. You can find out a lot more about what's working. You can have a pre-roll that you can't skip. That's, you know, 15 seconds, 8 seconds, whatever, of a commercial, video commercial before an episode begins. But there are also lots more interactive things you can do, and you can learn a lot about who's responding to an ad. So if you show something and you can, you know, click here to find out more about Nike shoes or something, you find out, you know, maybe fewer people click than would respond to a TV ad, but you can learn what else they're watching and where else they've been, and you can just learn a lot more about your target audience than you could on TV.
And then you can target the ad to what they're interested is one by one?
In some cases, one by one, but at least very narrow demographics. So you can, you know, if data mining shows that people who buy your shoes tend to be, you know, in between 20 and 25 and live on the coasts, you can go to MySpace or something like that, which are getting much better at that kind of micro targeting and saying, okay, I want to buy ads only on pages viewed by people who are between 20 and 25 and live on their coast. There's an old saying in advertising that 50% of all ad money is wasted. The problem is you can never tell which half. And this is going to help solve that problem.
Well, here's the show me the money formula and maybe a new way to show the listener. Let's go to one of the money guys behind this move to TV-style entertainment on the web. Joining us right now from Menlo Park, California, is Mark Kwame, venture capitalist with the big VC firm Sequoia Capital, an early investor in YouTube. He's a board member of FunnyOrDie.com, a comedy site on the web co-founded by Will Ferrell. In addition to Ferrell, Bill Murray, Brooke Shields, Danny DeVito, and Jason Biggs have also posted videos on the site. Mark Kwame, thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks very much for having me.
So venture capital guys don't like to put money anywhere that a big wave isn't following. What do you see coming in online TV style entertainment?
Well, I think basically what you're seeing is as the other person was just mentioning, you're seeing a big move in advertising dollars. And right now, broadcast television's about a $60 billion a year market. Internet, if you take out search and you just say the kind of advertising that's flowing towards videos and print type stuff, it's about a $10 billion market. So it's moving very, very quickly into this area, and you want to have content that those advertisers can advertise against.
What's your assessment then of the market, the audience of people willing to sit down, you know, in that upright chair probably with a mouse and a smaller computer screen and while away their time being amused online? How's it compare with the television audience, old-fashioned?
Well, what's interesting right now is there's been some recent research. If you have a broadband connection, you know, a cable modem mm-hmm. or a DSL modem in your house, you will spend of your free time, of your free entertainment time, you'll spend about 34% of your time watching television, but you'll spend 32% of your time online. And so what's happening, and that's the second most thing you use for your entertainment time. So whether that's, you know, looking at a website or looking at a video or whatever it happens to be. And so, you know, where people want to go where people are spending their attention, and people are spending a lot of time online.
Do you think that, I don't know, in a decade they're going to be getting the majority of their entertainment online? Is this going to merge with the television? Is the big screen still the king and queen when it comes to home entertainment? Or you know, just how big can this get, Mark?
Well, I got to tell you, I don't know if you've. I just recently had my son install a Apple TV, which kind of links YouTube videos, my music, my family photos onto my big screen in my living room. And I would have said before that, hey, you know, this is, you know, it's going to be a different environment. But I got to tell you, when it's all integrated together, it's an amazing experience. And so I think it's going to be really hard for folks to say, oh, this is an online situation or a computer situation, this is on my television, this is on my radio, whatever it happens to be. What's happening is all these medias are really blending together.
Maybe all rivers flowing to one screen. Let's get a taste of what your crew is up to. Will Ferrell started Anchorman, of course, and Blades of Glory. Co-founder of the new site, FunnyOrDie.com, features videos from experienced talent like Brooke Shields, Bill Murray. Here's Ferrell in a video. Hey, it's kind of, well, you judge for yourself. It's called Third Date.
You enjoyed
it was
Taste of
great.
LA, huh?
I loved it. Yeah.
You enjoyed the tacos the
yeah.
most, huh?
Yeah. This beautiful.
Yeah.
Oh, well, this is gorgeous.
This is actually the Hamiltons.
Okay.
Here's my place. Little townhouse picked up. Got them down from 900 to 891.
This is a Porto toilet.
I think you'd be surprised. It's wonderfully detailed and It's a nice place.
I'm not going to go into a porta toilet, though.
Let's just have a glass of wine.
This is totally weird. We're going in here?
Yeah.
All right.
See? Isn't that nice?
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
This is beautiful.
Thank you. I know.
Will Ferrell taking his date, a third date, back to his pad. It's a porta potty. Okay.
Housing is expensive in California.
I guess so. But how much can you do with little chiclets like this? I don't know, with a minute's worth of joking around a porta potty. Can you build a business on that?
Well, I mean, what's really interesting about comedy is that you can, in a minute or 2 minutes, really get people to laugh. And what's, for example, that video I think has been seen, close to a million or over a million times. The other video we did, The Landlord, has been seen, 45 million times.
This is where Will Ferrell is confronting a vicious landlord who's supposedly drunk and 2 years old.
Exactly, exactly. And, both those little videos were shot at the same day, and they were shot, in the backyard of, I think it was either Will's backyard.
I think it was Will's, I'm reading here, yeah.
And so they were at a party and said, hey, let's just do this. They took a handy cam and they just kind of put that together. And what we're finding is that, for basically zero cost of content and just a good idea, you can get something, very a lot of viewers on the internet. And then if you do that, then, advertisers come along with it. But I think that the one thing we did with Funny or Die was combine user-generated content with celebrity content with a voting mechanism, because one of the problems with user-generated content, there's a lot of junk out there. And so how do you get the junk, as we like to put it in the crypt, never to be seen again?
Right, and hope that it doesn't float to the top and that the best stuff does. Joseph Min, James McQuibby, Mark Kwame, please stand by. We've got a lot of listeners who want to join us. Let's take a call from Los Angeles, California. Ken, you're on the air.
I think one of the problems that we have with this new form of entertainment is you don't use new technologies to tell the same old stories. When you have a new technology, it's not best to use it because it's cheaper, or you could relive the same storytelling. My example is in the 1800s, we only had parlor dramas, but then people invented new sources of lighting, and we were able to expand the sets, and we were able to tell stories differently. I think the people who are in this medium now are the people who know one way of telling stories, and that's traditional since the 1940s. And you take the internet, which is a lean-forward, experiential type of media,
yep.
The entertainment offered should be the same.
Ken, we hear it loud and clear. Let's pick it up. Joseph Min, what about it? Is it a plus or a minus to have the sort of credentialed TV production world now leaning onto the web? Do they bring the right instincts for this medium?
Well, I think that's a really interesting question. I think it's natural that people will try to adapt from, people who are really good at the old medium will try and make it into the new medium, and some of them will make it, and some of them won't. And the same thing happened when we went from silent movies to talkies, and some of the stars were able to do that, and some it just didn't. They opened their mouths, and everything went to hell. Some of the guys that I've been talking to that are behind these new, more ambitious internet shows realize that they realize this is really hard. They've got to think differently, and they're doing things like soliciting ideas, plots. Some other submissions from folks. That's going to happen with Quarter Life. They're going to set up their own website, and they want people to, maybe aspiring directors, actors, or writers, to write in, to suggest things, to submit them, and the good stuff will make it on. So they realize that, yeah, you do have to adapt some. If it's going to be interactive, this is one way to do it. I think there'll be a lot of experiments like that.
James McQuibby, we're hearing a couple of things here. One, we've got a new medium. Okay, yes, but then if there's going to be convergence and it ends up on a big screen in the family room, how different do you see the future here, or how like what the TV era has been?
I have to weigh in on the old saying that the more things change, the more they stay the same. For now, we're experiencing a lot of these things on these 19-inch screens or 15-inch screens, or in the portable case like an iPod, you're carrying it around on a 2- or 3-inch screen. That's all very different for now. But the end game is still the television. It's where the average adult, believe it or not, spends 4 hours of their time every day. I can't imagine.
It's hard to believe. That must include some people stuck in bed who listen all day.
It does, and it includes people who watch sports all weekend long. But the average is still pretty darn high. And the thing about that is that if you really want to have an impact in the dramatic world or in the commercial world, you have to get back to the TV screen. And I have to go with Mark, who talked about the Apple TV, which is one of many ways to get your content from the internet onto the TV. That's going to be the thing that's going to bring it all back together. We're going to see it coming back to the TV, and I think will actually deprive us, to our caller's point, possibly deprive us of the opportunity to have more innovative programming options, because we'll suddenly go back to the big screen and we'll say, oh, we know what this is about. Mm-hmm. It's about 30-minute sitcoms and 60-minute dramas and two-hour movies.
Mark Kwame, is that what you're betting on, or is it the user, listener, viewer-produced stuff that's going to keep coming in there, the interactive piece? Is it you know, old school or new that's going to win here?
Well, I think it's going to be a blend of all of it. Let me just two comments on this. One is, I don't know if you have teenagers in your house, but I'm 14.
Yeah, I know that path well.
And so my son's a big NFL football guy, and so he sits there now and watches the television for all the football games. In one hand, he's got the remote, and in the other hand, he's got his laptop computer checking all his fantasy sports scores.
Sure, of course.
And so what he's doing is he's actually integrating the online experience with the broadcast experience. And the interesting question will be is, when do those two things merge? And I think what we're trying to do, for example, use Funnier Die as an example, and there's many others out there, is that how do you create this kind of big screen experience, talent, capability combined with instant user voting, instant user experience? And, you know, I think one thing we're seeing on the internet right now is the average successful internet video is about a minute and a half to 2 minutes. And the reason why that is the case is people can click off very quickly and go do something else. You're not seeing very many successful 10-minute videos, whereas on television, it's still that 30-minute sitcom.
So as an investor, do you like that, or do you want to get them chained into the 30 minutes and all the ads that can deliver? Or do you just take it as a fact of life? They'll always click off, even when it converges.
Well, I think what we're going is we're going from the, what I like to say is the information generation to the attention generation. You know, us who grew up in the kind of 80s and 90s and the early part of the 2000s here, we all were trying to get our information when we want it, where we want it, how we want it. We now can do that. So now the question is what's going to garner my attention and how much time I'm going to be spending at something? So something websites look at very, very carefully, especially video websites, is time on site. Okay, mm-hmm. And so as whether that time is in five videos or one video or 27 videos doesn't really matter. We're focused on how do we keep people on our sites in order to both present content to them as well as to present advertising to them.
And I guess you break out of the iron box here. If they like long form, they can go there. If they like short form, maybe that'll be available too.
Exactly. The one big one thing that hasn't happened, back to the caller's question, mm-hmm. is we really haven't seen yet the full integration of the two, where, you know, there are some guys that are exploring with some things where if you watch the TV program on your computer, you can actually change the camera angles. You can actually be the director in almost real time.
Right now, Elise is calling from Attleboro, Massachusetts. Elise, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm a huge fan of Battlestar Galactica. And I think sci-fi has been brilliant at bringing people from television to their website and back and forth. There was a time where they had, in between two seasons and there was a long break, they actually created webisodes of something that happened in the in-between time of the plot, which kept me interested in a way that I might not have been.
So they're tucking little mini stories in between the major plot developments. And are you willing to go and watch that online on your computer just as intently as you might on the TV?
Well, I thought I wasn't going to be, but I was so anxious to see something in the in-between season time that I did. And since then, I periodically check the website and I find out about whatever information they're releasing about the new season. And so as someone who doesn't actually watch television on my computer, this got me totally hooked. And so I'm even more of a fan of the TV show because of what they've managed to do online.
Elise, what do you hope for down the line? You love Battlestar Galactica. Everybody's got their favorites. But what are you hoping that the sort of integration or rise of the web when it comes to entertainment brings? What are you wishing for?
Well, I'm someone who has a very busy life, and so if I can't catch it at something at the exact time that it's on television and I haven't figured out how to use TiVo or tape it, the fact that I can go to the website makes it really easy to catch up. It's also just more fun to see. The other thing that they've done is that they have blogs and all sorts of stuff of other where fans can talk to each other, and that's really fun. It's not something that I ever thought I'd be interested in. But it is kind of neat to connect with other people who like the same kind of material that I do.
So you may be connecting in a more narrow community, but you may be connecting more intensively within that sci-fi fan base. Elise, thank you very much for your call. Let's get another from Lincoln, Massachusetts. Paul is on the air. Hi, Paul.
Hey, how you doing?
Pretty good. What do you see?
Well, you know, I think the most exciting part of this for me is that it seems like there's this fundamental shift away from distribution and back to content. And that's what I think is really, really exciting. Whether you get it through the computer or whether you download it to your iPhone or suddenly, you know, the distribution channels that used to be the sort of the purse strings of the industry are sort of falling apart. And it's all shifting, I hope, back to content and, you know, hopefully more choice and better content.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Paul, let us pick it up. Joseph Mann, first to you in L.A. What do you see happening on the distribution front and the sort of primacy of content producers versus those who control the pipeline?
That's really interesting. I mean, this is an age-old debate, and a lot of it has been sort of framed as Hollywood versus Silicon Valley, and Silicon Valley has been all about finding new distribution channels, new technologies to get stuff around, and the Hollywood guys have been sort of dragging their heels and more conservative. And I think that's really an outdated model. I don't think that's the way it's working anymore. And they're really collaborating, which is certainly great for the consumer. It might be sort of tough on a lot of folks in the middle, you know, the studios and companies like that. But the consumer is going to win out in that. I think the content is definitely going to improve because there will be so many more choices. And the way you framed the question was interesting. There is not going to be – you talked about community and there being a sort of a loss of community. It is true that we will no longer have, you know, the world come to a standstill at 9 o'clock on a Sunday for Ed Sullivan or whatever.
It's been a while, though.
Yeah, or whatever the present-day equivalent of that is going to be. But on the other hand, I think you can reach a broader number of people. The 45 million, you know, watching a Funny or Die video is kind of mind-blowing. And I think there will be more opportunities where things will come from nowhere and become a very big deal over time because you've got more time to reach people. And
maybe not simultaneously watching it, but ultimately,
right.
I mean, 45 million, you just don't see that for a television show.
That's right. That's right. But eventually everybody, you know, it's you reach everybody, but in a different way. It's not at the same time, but it can become part of the fabric of society because eventually you'll hear about it from somebody and you'll just check it out.
James McQuivey, what about it? Does the presumption that people often have that they can have a water cooler conversation about CSI something or you name it, does that go away? Does it just change? And I don't want to lose track of this distribution issue as well. It's interesting.
Sure.
There's Hollywood versus Silicon Valley, but there's also the pipelines themselves, the cable companies, the big elephants here.
Absolutely. Both very important questions. And I think the water cooler of today is no longer the water cooler. It's your email account. It's your online, the way the caller mentioned about Battlestar Galactica. By the way, I'm a huge fan. the way she mentioned that people are having a conversation with other Battlestar Galactica fans. And yeah, there's only a few hundred thousand or maybe a couple of million out there, but you can find them online, which around your water cooler, you just can't anymore. So
you can
the
all beam up together.
Yeah, there you go. The conversation is still happening. It's just happening virtually. And there are people who find that frightening, that we're
Why?
Not going to be talking to each other the same way, that we're not going to be relating to people face-to-face anymore. I personally don't. I feel like we're looking at a world in which we can find people who want to share an experience with us that we never would have met otherwise.
But now, the fear factor becomes, because it's a sort of invisible underground armies of the night, you don't know who's in the Battlestar Galactica fan club. You don't hear them chatting. They're typing it out.
Well, that could be a fear, or maybe the fear is just your community suddenly has less vibrance because...
Your physical community. community.
Your physical community, your neighborhood. You're not out on the porch talking to each other anymore. And I have had people say, well, what about that? And in fact,
it seems like a legitimate
concern. It's a legitimate concern, although it's one that television has already diminished over the last two, three decades anyway. So I don't know that it's any worse with the internet than it already was. In fact, the internet is possibly a better way because now we can at least talk to some people and say, hey, I loved that episode. What do you think Starbucks is going to do in the next episode?
What about the cable guys and how they're looking at all this?
This is an absolutely important issue to think about because we're talking about who's producing this stuff and how they want to get their content in front of you. But guess what? The cable companies, the satellite companies, and now a few telephone companies who are trying to put television in your home, they make about $60 billion a year giving you your cable subscription. And
so you can have that 100, 200, 500 channels.
Average household has 100 channels in their home, and they're the ones providing it. And even if you only watch 10 or 20 of those, on average it's between 10 and 20, they want to be making money from providing that to you. And if suddenly all the best shows that you want are available online, you don't need them, and they're terrified of this. So they are the ones working terribly quickly to find a way to connect the internet and the TV in your home. You're going to see very aggressive moves from people. In fact, Mark from Sequoia Capital mentioned before that, you know, he has a son who's watching the sports and doing fantasy football on his laptop. Well, Time Warner Cable has already integrated that for many of its communities that it serves,
Windows open on top of the show.
Exactly. You're watching sports and then suddenly a stat from another game pops up on the screen and says your particular fantasy football league has just, you know, progressed in this direction, or you're losing or you're winning. That kind of interactivity they are desperate to provide because they're afraid that suddenly you're going to leave that subscription of your television services aside and you're just going to need them as a broadband internet provider, which just does not provide them with the same revenue they're used to.
So there's one more big engine pushing on this front. Let's take a call from Pablo in Framingham, Massachusetts. Pablo, you're on the air.
Oh, hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My question is, how does the panel see censorship playing a role in this move towards the internet? Some people might make the argument that because TV, you know, became so tame with the FCC rules and everything like that, internet, you can find whatever content you want, no censorship. So how does that play?
Pablo, let me ask you, what are you hoping for? Are you hoping for wide open, you know, Wild West freedom there, or are you hoping for standards, decency standards?
No, Wild West openness would be great.
Okay, good. Joseph Men, what about it? I mean, on the web, it's not like TV. It's not broadcast. You choose where you're going. So when you get there, Lord knows you can see just about anything. And a lot of this new made-for-the-web entertainment is pretty racy, pretty raunchy even. Do you see it coming under FCC-style oversight, the kind we've seen for television, or is this going to be a wilder world?
I think the genie's out of the bottle there, because if they try to control it, people are just going to go elsewhere. I'm sure that there, particularly in an election year, I'm sure there will be lots of noise about this sort of thing and some valid concerns. But, you know, if you can't keep your 13-year-old from going wherever they want on the net, it's not going to really change when you throw in video. I mean, the people that will be handicapped by that a little bit, I suppose, are the biggest networks, which would come in for some public shaming if they do an R-rated version of their regular shows or R-rated outtakes or something to try and build buzz on the internet. I think that might be hard for them, but it's not really going to slow down anybody else, I don't think.
James McQuibby, do you really, I mean, think how sensitive Americans can get on this. Bill Clinton made so much of the V-chip some way for parents to control what their children were watching. I mean, if the genie's out of the bottle and everything that's on the web is suddenly on its way to the family room TV screen, well, good heavens, some of the stuff on the web is probably not what Good Housekeeping Seal was made for.
This is going to be a tremendous issue. I would expect people to make political hay out of this for the next several years because technologically there is actually nothing we can do. It's not like broadcast where the FCC can come in and say, I control your right to use that broadcast tower to put that channel on the air in your local market. We have no comparable ability to do this. And the only place that anyone is trying to do this really on any consistent basis is China because their government sees that this is their responsibility for a whole host host of reasons, not just moral issues, obviously.
Responsibility, not to mention their manner of political control.
Certainly. And we're probably not going to see ourselves go that direction. In fact, it might even go the opposite way. I need to tell you about an interesting conversation I had with a producer just last year who produces for broadcast television. And they were saying to me that they feel disadvantaged now because not only did they have to compete with cable, HBO, which can use certain words that are not allowed in broadcast and can show things that aren't allowed in broadcast. Now they have to compete with the internet. And this producer said to me, it's just not fair. We're going to lose our audience because we can't be edgy when the content requires it. We can't tell the story that we honestly feel needs to be told. Now, whether you agree with that or not, and there will be a lot of debate over whether that's a valuable viewpoint or not,
you can see the disadvantage.
If suddenly you don't mind a little bit of profanity or nudity, you can get some really funny things online for free. Well, you're going to make a difficult choice between do I turn the TV on or do I turn the internet on?
Joseph Mann, our caller Pablo wants that Wild West, but you know, a lot of people may not. I mean, could this be the new front coming open that ends up getting the web somehow put into constraints? Because, you know, people just won't tolerate full web-style porno gushing into the family room.
Well, what's gushing? I mean, I think that there's certainly a big debate about this. I mean, right now the focal point is concern about predators on MySpace and other sites like that. That appears to be the biggie. And, you know, a lot of politicians will get a lot of mileage out of this. But I think a lot of parents don't realize that they do have a fair amount of control. I mean, there's some pretty good filtering stuff out there. At the very least, you can watch what your kids are doing. You know, there's a lot of stuff you can do. Then, you know, the determined, you know, 13-year-old boy or, you know, 14-year-old will get around it. But, you know, they always have. I mean, they go to the library and find it.
Yeah, well, when it comes to surround sound, they may get way into it, too.
I should add, though, from the cable company's perspective, they've been pushed by the FCC and by parents to add all these parental controls so that you can configure channels that are blocked. The percent of parents that actually do that is in the single-digit percentages. Mm.
Okay, look out with us. 10 years out, Joseph Mann, how do you see it? Are we going to have a different kind of entertainment product, a different kind of drama in this country, or just something very familiar flowing, you know, maybe with windows on top and chats going on top of it, but something quite familiar after all the technology kicks in?
That's an interesting question. I feel pretty confident in sort of both directions, that you will definitely see the accustomed mode of storytelling for an audience. Maybe, you know, it's an aging audience, you know, the people that watch network news and, you know, watch all the advertisements for you know, Depends.
Maybe the grayer part of, yeah, but there it's the grayer part already. Mm-hmm.
Right. But on the other hand, you will definitely see some interesting, different new things. And I think you'll be able to sort of customize it. There'll be a lot more choices for the consumer. So maybe you can watch the same show, you know, with a little on-screen chat bubble to talk to, you know, fellow fans you're watching at the same time, your friends are watching the same show at the same time. But you can also not turn that on and, you know, watch it the old-fashioned way.
James McQuibby, if we beam back down from the Battlestar Galactica in 2017, what are we going to find playing?
Well, the big uncertainty here is whether or not today's teenagers and their media behaviors represent the future or whether they're going to outgrow it and settle into just like the rest of us.
And a lazy boy.
Exactly. And if they are the future, then it means we are going to have this kind of more interactive, more social media where people want to have an input in where the plot goes next, where they want to choose for themselves how to experience it, when to experience it, and might even shift the experience based on their time and their convenience. We're leaning in that direction already, but it's really the next generation's choice as to whether that is going to be the norm or whether that will just be something that teenagers forever use to express themselves counter to the common culture.
Well, I'll tell you, if you want my guess, I think it is the future. I don't think they're going back to the lazy boy in the beer can. You know, some, it's always going to be there, but there's just a new mindset. Hey, what do I know? But that's if I were placing my VC money, my bet, I'd bet on it. It's been great having both of you with us today. Really fascinating. Joseph Mann with the LA Times, joining us from Los Angeles, author of All the Rave, The Rise and Fall of Sean Fanning's Napster. Joseph, thanks a lot for being with us today.
Thanks very much.
And James McQuibby, terrific to have you with us. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you, Tom.
James McQuibby, Vice President and Principal Analyst at Forrester Research. Listeners, you can continue the conversation and download the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.